week's show, our first impressions of MLS is back on ESPN, Peacock goes all in on the Premier League, CBS gobbles up more of the Champions League rights, plus we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. I'm Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, alongside my guest co-host, Nick Webster. All right, Nick, so we've got so much to get to in this episode. It's not going to be that lengthy, but there's going to be some good information in this one. We're going to talk more about CBS and some scoop on what I know of their plans for the Champions League, as well as, of course, MLS and first impressions of what we've seen. But from this past week, having watched all the different football from around the world, were there any games or one game in particular that stood out as your favourite match or most interesting match?
Well, firstly, thanks for having me back, Chris. You must be scraping the bottle of the barrel because three times in the last 5 weeks, so I'm feeling particularly honoured. And it's always great to hear your dulcet tones and be allowed to wax lyrically about the beautiful game.
Too kind.
And yes, I'm a bit of a slave to the Premiership, but I am so impressed, and it really pains me to say it, with Manchester United. This is a team that is completely unrecognizable from the team pre-Bruno Fernandes.
Yep.
And it's almost, the United fans might say it's sacrilege, but it's almost Cantona-esque, the way this man has come into the United team and just completely lifted not only the atmosphere around United, but the players. I mean, I had to freeze my TiVo, but I saw Paul Pogba and Anthony Martial smiling. I mean, this is something that, put it in the collector's item, because it just doesn't happen. And the football they're playing is really quite scintillating. And, you know, as an Englishman, really happy with the development of Mason Greenwood. I mean,
yeah,
this kid is, I mean, he's something completely spectacular. Two-footed, can hit the ball like a rocket with both feet. And then, you've got young Phil Foden, obviously another Manchester product, but this time with City. And all of a sudden, it looks very good for the future of English football. So I'd be really impressed with that. And then the other story that kind of made my eyebrows go up a little bit was the situation going on with Barcelona and a certain Lionel Messi. Supposedly Messi's very, very unhappy with what's going on with the backroom noises in the boardroom at Barcelona and making noises that he might actually want to leave Barcelona after something like 15, 16 years. So that's definitely a story to keep your eye on. So those are the two things that have really got me scurrying around the internet and reading everything I can.
Yeah, for me, from this past week, I mean, I've watched some Premier League, I've watched La Liga, Serie A, I mean, you name it, pretty much watching soccer almost nonstop, really. But what stood out for me this past week so far has been the Football League. And a lot of it is whether it's the playoffs, the semi-finals, one of which was Fleetwood Town against Wycombe Wanderers, which, I mean, for most people kind of hearing those names, they probably think, oh, gosh, how boring is this going to be? But it was in the first leg, it was a 4-1 game. You had Joey Barton managing Fleetwood Town on the receiving end, unfortunately, for him at least. And then I think it was Gareth Ainsworth, the Wycombe Wanderers manager. And both of them looked like rock stars. They looked like Joey Barton dressed up as, I don't know, some guy from Oasis. Gareth Ainsworth looked like he was like a headbanger from Def Leppard or something. But the funniest thing in this game was that not only were there two red cards and five goals in this game, behind the goal, I guess the Fleetwood Town fans had put together a whole group of mannequins to make it look like this was the Fleetwood Town ultras kind of hanging around with a drum, and probably a likeness to the actual ultras or the hardcore fans at Fleetwood. But on top of that, on top of those things, late in the game, you had Adebayo Akinfenwa coming into this game as a substitute. For anyone who's seen him in the past before, he's played at several clubs, but he's 38 years old. He's 224 pounds. And this guy's got some great skills. Back in the day, this is before your time, Nick. This is how far back this is. Fatty Folks, you know, kind of like some of these legendary players who are just enormous. I think he was a goalkeeper back in like what, the late 1800s, early 1900s.
Yeah.
But Akinfenwa coming on into the game with about 5 minutes to go. And he can play. He can play really, really well. He can run. But that was something quite different that you don't usually see in the Premier League.
Well, hence he only came on for 5 minutes because he was probably, you know, blown out of his backside if it had gone into the sixth minute. Right. But yeah, I mean, to your point actually about the lower divisions, you know, I follow what's going on in the Championship. And that race is always so intriguing. I keep on thinking Leeds are going to choke, but they actually did the business today with a thumping 5-0 win. So yeah, they're looking in good shape. West Brom had a huge win over Derby, and you know, I'm actually got a friend who's on the board at Derby County, and he was crying to me yesterday because the Baggies did the job on them. So for Derby, you know, they're on the outside looking in at the playoffs at the moment, and they've got a tough run in, and they play Leeds second last game of the season, which could actually be a huge game both sides, you know, for Leeds to actually wrap up the Championship and get them back in the Premiership, which I think is going to be great for the Premier League.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it'll Leeds United are a team that needs to be in the Premier League, you know, simple as that. So
absolutely.
I'm pulling for Leeds and hope that they, you know, the last 3 years, I mean, they put themselves in prime position to get promoted one way or the other, and they've stubbed their toe every single time. So I'm hoping automatic promotion for Leeds this time.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely. Just kind of a legendary team, whether you love them or love to hate them. But that for me is, I've watched a lot of the Championship this past week. That for me right now is the go-to league. It's on ESPN Plus. Most of the games are on there. And that is the most competitive title race. Not only do you have, after that big win today against Stoke City, Leeds United at the top of the table, West Brom still are not safe. It's not guaranteed to be promoted. You got Brentford coming up real fast right behind them. And like you said, teams like Derby, Nottingham Forest, Cardiff City, Swansea City, my team, Derby County, etc. This is going to be a really, really good run into the end of the season.
No, I think you bring up a great point about competitiveness because of the fact that the playoffs you know, do keep interest alive. And I've watched some of the games in the Premier League, and like I said before, you know, I'm a bit of a Premier League snob, but some of the games have been absolute dogs.
Yeah,
you know, they've been been terrible.
Spurs
and
Everton
teams. Yeah. Oh, well, I just watched Spurs again. Spurs Bournemouth. Oh, it was awful. And obviously, Bournemouth have got something to play for, but they're just not a very good team. And unfortunately, Tottenham aren't a good team either. So yeah. I've seen some terrible games. And the only games that really have really captured my imagination, obviously the Liverpool City game I thought was tremendous. And as I've mentioned before, you know, Man United and Chelsea have really entertained because, you know, they really have something to play for. So I think when you're watching the Premier League, you need to see teams that are, you know, gunning for those European places.
Yeah, and in those games, like for example, Brighton, when they're not playing some of the, whether it's Manchester United or Liverpool, when they are playing clubs kind of outside of the top six, they've been refreshing to watch. Even the game against Arsenal was a great game too for Brighton. Leicester's been good. Newcastle's been really good too. There have been some good matches, but Spurs are playing almost like a very cynical team, and it seems to be like the Jose Mourinho influence, just a very cynical, I don't know, just a really boring team to watch right now. It's actually not painful, but it's not refreshing or exciting to watch them by any means.
So that's an interesting one because obviously, you know, Tottenham have this, you know, history and tradition of wanting to be, you know, entertainers and play great football. And, you know, Mourinho just doesn't seem like a fit for them. But I guess we'll have to wait and see with a full season under his belt.
And that's the thing, too, like, what, earlier this season, and I think Daniel Levy was thinking that, OK, bring in Jose, you know, have it be some great attacking football, none of this kind of defensive, so to speak, with under Pochettino. if anything, it's worse now in terms of just the way that they're playing, and also of course with a big name, and then the NFL game's going to be at White Hart Lane, the new White Hart Lane, and then everything came crashing down, including Spurs, including Jose, including the chances of the NFL games being played there too. So I think it's going to be a long summer at White Hart Lane. But Nick, before we go to MLS, I just have to talk about a couple of disclaimers. I mean, I have no idea what you're going to say and what your impressions are of the first game and also of ESPN's coverage. We did talk about this a couple of weeks ago and said, okay, the first few days, expect to see a lot of flubs or just it's going to take a while to get going. But I can say this for you too, but neither of us hate MLS. Neither of us have any kind of animosity towards Major League Soccer. We want the league to succeed. We want it to grow and get better. But we have to say that too, because otherwise we get people on social media and other places going like, oh, you guys are just MLS haters or Euro snobs or all sorts of things. But that's for, nothing can be further from the truth there. So having said that, Nick, what were your first impressions of just ESPN's coverage for that Orlando against Miami game?
Well, I thought they did a really good job, to be fair. I was really, honestly, quite moved by the ceremony before the kickoff involving the players and Black Lives Matter. Yep. I thought that was really well done, so heartfelt, very compassionate, and you could really feel the raw emotion coming through the TV screen of the players involved. So I thought that was really respectful and beautifully done. But there's an interesting there's so many sub stories, Chris, to this MLS is back tournament. Yeah. The players, and I'm actually on a Twitter feed, MLS is back insider, and I'll quickly read you this tweet. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's an anonymous player insider agent media poll. Okay, true or false? None of us want to lose our jobs, so we're just keeping our mouths shut and hoping for the best. 70% players said that was true.
Wow.
Which leads me to believe that all is not well in Orlando, and you can see why. I mean, FC Dallas, one of the teams, actually had to go home, 10 positive cases. Nashville, like they have quite a few positive cases as well. Yep. So the tournament is really in flux, and in some weird, perverse way, actually it could help the tournament because now it kind of balances things out. There'll be, six groups of four instead of that weird group of six. But I just don't see how they're going to keep this tournament alive because, Florida is spiking. You live in Florida. Mm-hmm. There's just so many outside agents that have the potential to come in and infect some of the players. And it just seems like it's a disaster waiting to happen, unfortunately. Now, I know Don Garber and ESPN have put together a project, and I like it. I thought the screen they had with advertising that wasn't overly distracting. The mics on the pitches were great, although I am a little disappointed with the time delay, because a part of hearing players speak is the use of industrial language, and I think everybody right now is familiar with industrial language. It's not the end of the world. Mm-hmm. And this would add so much more, not only emotion, but nuance to what the players are talking about, which I think would be great. I thought the camera angles were cool, although I would advise ESPN not to do any overhead shots because, as we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, it does have that kind of high school stadium feel to it, which I think cheapens what MLS is trying to do. But, overall, I thought Champion and Twelman did their usual stellar job. And, the quality of football in the first half I thought was just terrible, but that's to be expected. And then, it's nothing like a Portuguese superstar in Nani to get a dramatic 96-minute winner.
Yeah, there's so much to cover in this one. And you are right, too. There's a lot of subplots and subtopics on this one. The players, I completely understand where the players are coming from. You mean, just being in this bubble and seeing all these reports of... And actually breaking news is Nashville have dropped out of the tournament. So it is down to those six groups of four, like you said. So as a player, and then you're hearing reports about the test. I mean, one day it's positive, the next day it's negative. So there's a lot of question marks about the kind of the how much you mean truth there are in these tests anyway. I mean, how accurate are they? Being inside a bubble, being in for I mean, this what 48, 49 or more games left to go. This is going to be a long summer in an environment where, you mean, you're contained. You can't go out to the clubs or for drinks with friends or to meet up with family. So it is a really tough ask of the players. But as far as the television coverage, I was really impressed, especially for the first game. Like you said, that the Black Lives Matter kind of moments before the game started, that was really, really long silence. Actually, they timed it. It was 8 minutes and 46 seconds of complete silence. And it was powerful. It was one of those things that at the end you were like, holy crap, this was really intense. This really got the message through. And I think that absolutely right there, that divided the audience. I mean, so anyone who's, you mean, against the Black Lives Matter movement, which there are many people, I mean, that sends a message right to them to say, hey, this is not for you. This is for people that are more open, that want to see change. And for them to make that type of statement before the game even kicks off, I mean, it was really, really powerful. The game itself, oh my gosh. I mean, yes, and this is not a criticism of Major League Soccer, because in the game on Thursday that New York City FC and Philadelphia Union, the play was much better. But probably the two worst teams in Major League Soccer, Orlando and Miami, were absolutely awful. I mean, and it was very much a physical game, overly physical. I'm watching this game going, okay, when I see Dom Dwyer make the first foul, I'm like, okay, that's a straight yellow card. I see him make a second straight foul like that. That should be another yellow card. He should be sent off. And that's even before halftime. And he got no yellow cards. He just got a free kick on both of those. And then, of course, the unfortunate incident with Andres Reyes getting elbowed in the Adam's apple and having breathing difficulties and having to be stretched off the pitch. But not just Dom Dwyer, but that whole entire game was refereed very poorly. The referee didn't protect the players. And the level of play was absolutely awful. It was just very physical and not attractive at all, and gave MLS a bad name, but it's just based on those two teams. There are much better teams in MLS that play much better football.
Well, and so I would be looking at MLS and whoever put the fixture list together and going, why on earth in the first game back, when you have really the sports landscape to yourself, would you put two dog crap teams together?
Yep.
I mean, like you say, I thought it was an overly physical game. I thought there should have been a couple of red cards. I mean, there was a couple of tackles where I would go, oh, that's a straight red.
Yep.
And nothing happened. You know, we spoke about what the conditions would be like. I mean, it looks so hot and steamy, Chris. I mean, yeah. Those players.
It looked like they had a hot shower, right, on the pitch.
Dripping.
Yeah.
Dripping buckets. But yeah, you know, there's much better teams in MLS. Have the first game be a marquee matchup. Go LAFC against the Galaxy.
Yeah.
You know, Seattle versus Portland. I mean, make it something where the you know, it really matters. I mean, this is a rivalry. We're talking Orlando into Miami. It's not even a rivalry yet. It's just, you know, it's just two
first games game ever.
That happened to be in the same state and no supporters. So, you know, I thought that was a missed opportunity by MLS to really take the sporting landscape and say, hey, look at us. This is what we've done. This is what we've created. And this is our product. And it's really good. Because like you say, you know, I hadn't thought about the Black Lives Matter display as something that would, you know, split opinion, but now that you've mentioned it, I could actually see that happening. Yeah, so that had to be done. But then on the back of that, have a great game. Have a great game that really gets people talking about the football. And that didn't happen. And I didn't see the game this morning. And like you just said, you know, with Nashville out of the tournament, they're not going to be the last team to go, unfortunately. And I just feel that MLS have tried to ram this through. And if it goes pear-shaped, Chris, it's going to be such a black eye for the league. And the fact that, you know, there's collective bargaining with the players and many of the players are feeling really uncomfortable about being in Orlando and being in this bubble for, you know, 40-odd days, it just seems like they're playing with fire.
Yeah, I mean, the hope is that this is just isolated to Nashville and FC Dallas and taking those two teams out of the bubble, sending them home is going to limit the number of additional people that test positive. And that's the hope. I mean, because if it isn't that case, I mean, then it is one of those things where, you know, I mean, this tournament may not end because there might be other cases and those numbers increase. And then before you know it, the whole thing's falling apart. Hopefully, I mean,
I just don't see how. Yeah. I don't see the point of tying the results from this tournament into the regular season as well. It just seems a little half baked, Chris. I mean, I think the intention, and don't get me wrong, I think the intention to get MLS back in action is great. Mm-hmm. I think the way they've done it isn't great, and when we look at, you know, obviously, look, America's far bigger than Europe. But I think, you know, if MLS can, you know, cook up the draw the way they want it, they could have certainly rearranged fixtures so that, you know, East Coast teams stayed East Coast and really cut down on the traveling, maybe even get people on, you know, buses and trains, or, you know, if they're feeling uncomfortable with the plane travel. But just to jam it home to satisfy, obviously, sponsors and TV.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've got a horrible feeling this is going to come back and bite MLS.
Yeah, I hope you're wrong on this one, but it is. You might be right. The one thing about this, though, too, I would say that this was like the worst timing possible of all the things coming together, and a lot of it goes back to the CBA, the agreement hadn't been signed. And then there was the talk about playing games in a bubble, and this has been going back several weeks now. And Florida seemed to be the place that, everything opening up, it seemed to be the ideal location, and with ESPN and Disney having that property there, and then also with Major League Soccer wanting the players to come in early, I think early June, I think they wanted them to come in, and then quarantine here for a couple of weeks, or for a week or so. And then start individual training, then start group training, and then build that up to playing. I think it would have been like probably late June. And as it happened with the CBA back and forth, the actual negotiations, and then it ended up being that the players had a lot of power and a lot of say in this. And then I think a compromise was reached where they said, okay, all right, we'll kick off games in July 8th. That compromise eventually has hurt Major League Soccer because they lost time and they weren't able to bring those players in early. The players didn't want to come in early because they wanted to spend more time with their family, which is understandable. But actually, if anything, on this one, I think it's more the MLS players that kind of put MLS into a difficult position where they really had no alternative at that point because they already were sold on the Florida project, probably invested a lot of time and resources to make it happen. But yeah, what a mess. Hopefully things will continue and hopefully things will get better.
Well, I mean, look, we're missing a couple of marquee players as well, which, you know, makes you go, Carlos Vela is a wonderful talent, scores goals for fun, and it probably, I would say he's the face of MLS right now. Not only is he the face of MLS, but he's the face of Mexican football as well. So there's that whole opportunity to maybe get a different audience, a new audience in to watch the games, and he's not showing up. And then I think Jonathan Dos Santos isn't showing up. And, you know, these are the kind of marquee names that people will go, you know what, I'm going to watch. You know, I mean, if you're a fan of another league, because, you know, you've heard of these players, and you want to see what they're all about. So, I don't know how they you don't explain that one away. And of course, you have to respect the player's view. You know, if a player doesn't feel safe, and obviously there's still so much to be known about COVID. I mean, the unknowns are just keep on piling up, to be honest with you. So I don't blame any player that decided to stay at home and take care of their family and their safety first.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree completely. 100%. Yeah. It's really, I give MLS a lot of credit for taking the risk in this one. Hopefully it's not going to be an unfortunate risk, but hopefully it'll pay out for them, because they had to do something. It's a gamble, and they're trying to do the best that they can, but yeah, we'll just have to keep our fingers crossed that from the healthcare side of things, that things will get worked out. All right, let's move on to TV streaming news. And the big news this week, and this is one actually I had been working on for the past week, World Soccer Talk got the scoop, got the exclusive, so we were able to report on Wednesday that CBS have the exclusive English language rights to broadcast the UEFA Champions League and Europa League and the Super Cup for the remainder of this season, for the 2019-2020 season, through until the end of the 2023-24 season, which will also include next season. In total, it'll be more than four full seasons of coverage. Their first official broadcast will be Friday, July 10th, when they air the draw for the latter rounds of the Champions League and the Europa League. And their first actual match coverage will begin on Wednesday, August 5th, for the Europa League round of 16 second leg matches. Now, CBS already had the rights for 2021 through the end of the 2023-24 season. But with Turner Sports dropping out in the last few weeks and giving those rights back to UEFA, UEFA approached CBS and said, hey, would you be interested in starting up over a year in advance of what you're planning on doing? And we'll work with you to try to help you to get everything set up. And CBS agreed to that. So that's good news in that English language viewers don't have to worry. They don't have to worry about not having games on English language television. Of course, Univision and TUDN still have the rights on the Spanish language side through to 2024. And what this means for viewers in the United States is that every single UEFA Champions League match, Europa League match, and also the new Conference League matches will be streamed live on CBS All Access, which is the streaming platform from CBS. It's $6 a month. And then select games, select marquee games will be shown on CBS, the over-the-air network, and also the CBS Sports Network, which is its own cable satellite channel. So having heard that, Nick, are you excited? Or what's your thoughts about CBS and what they could do for the Champions League?
Well, I'm absolutely delighted that, all the games are going to be able to be viewed. I mean, that's a huge one. The fact that they'll do, free to air on the big games is great news. I think, streaming games on platforms, I mean, that's a given these days. I wasn't terribly impressed with Turner. I'll be very honest with you. And I'm not disappointed to see it go, although I'm very, very surprised that they just dropped it before the end of the cycle. I mean, I know that there has been obviously a delay. We would already have a European champion by now. They've done the coverage. They've taken us up to the quarterfinals, and then just to say no, we're not going to do it anymore. Strange one for me. But anyway, that's life in TV. I think CBS, have you heard what their plans are for a studio show and in terms of talent and whatnot?
Yeah, good question. So some of this is a scoop. Some of it is that so I know in terms of their production, in terms of their producers and the vision for the UEFA Champions League on CBS, they've hired, well, actually, it's somebody from internal. They have somebody that they've appointed that's going to lead this. And this is somebody who is a soccer person, who is knowledgeable about soccer. And they're putting this person in charge of really kind of setting up kind of the framework to go ahead and produce a really quality product. Even in the press release too, the press release that went out on Thursday, they mentioned that soccer is a very kind of, a very passionate audience and very critical, and that they're cognizant of that, and they're going to take all the right steps to make it as polished as possible. No names have been mentioned yet. They're focusing first on the studio talent, obviously just probably a presenter, maybe an analyst or two. But no names have been mentioned, but they have spoken to individuals to see, to gauge interest in these positions for it. So knock on wood, hopefully it'll be good.
Do you know if it's going to be American-centric, or are they going to go European?
Well, that I don't know yet. So that I know that most of the production is going to be handled for the games, around the games themselves, I believe will be handled out of the CBS Sports Network studio in New York City. So, which gives them the opportunity probably to get some bigger names, with it being New York, and if they wanted to, they could easily fly somebody over from, in London or Paris or Milan or wherever, I guess down the road after this whole coronavirus thing is over, to bring talent in. But right now, I don't know if they're going to be more American-centric or more European-centric or more kind of maybe an ESPN mixture where it's a little bit of both. All right, let me move on to the next news item, and that is to say goodbye to NBC Sports Gold and hello, Peacock. NBC Sports has announced that for the 2020-21 season, Peacock will stream 175 Premier League matches exclusively on the Peacock Premium platform. In total, Peacock Premium will present more than 1,500 hours of Premier League live match and shoulder programming. Included will be full event replays for all 380 matches on demand after 9 p.m. Eastern. So all content that was previously presented on NBC Sports Gold Premier League Pass will shift exclusively to Peacock Premium with the start of the 2020-21 Premier League season. NBC and NBCSN will continue to present extensive Premier League live match coverage, as well as pre- and post-match shows and additional shoulder programming. And if you haven't given Peacock a test drive yet, Peacock will be exclusively streaming all of the Premier League games on July 15th, which include Arsenal against Liverpool, Burnley against Wolves, Newcastle against Spurs, and Man City against Bournemouth. Also, to add to this too, that Peacock Premium is currently available at no additional cost to Comcast Xfinity X1 Flex customers across the country. And last but not least, Peacock Premium will be available for $4.99 a month and features more than 15,000 hours of content. And as of press time, it looks unlikely that Peacock will be available on Roku or Amazon Fire TV by the July 15th launch date. So Nick, having said that, we just talked about CBS before a minute ago and talked about kind of a warm and positive viewpoint that all the games would be available on streaming if people choose to go down that path. And now with the Premier League, for next season, there's going to be more games than ever before that are exclusive, only available on the paid streaming service, which is now Peacock, and that means NBC Sports Gold will no longer be involved. What's your take on this one?
Well, I think NBC are like your local crack dealer, right? They've got you hooked, they've got you addicted, and if you're a big fan of the Premiership, you're going to pay the premium price to see as many games as possible. For it to be successful, and I know that this is out of NBC's hands, but the fans, having fans back in the stands is going to be the barometer for me on whether I'm going to spend the extra money, because as much as I've enjoyed having the Premier League back, and in fact world football, I mean, I saw we were speaking about games that we saw at the Milan Juventus game was an absolute cracker as well. And can you imagine what that game would have been like with 70,000 fans inside?
Yeah,
I mean, it would have just been immense. So I think as a casual viewer of the Premier League, you're not going to spend the extra money, unfortunately. However, If you're a diehard, I think you know, Peacock will have everything you want, and the ability to see every game reminds me of the old Fox Sports World days, where, you know, we used to show all 10 games from the Premier League over the course of the weekend. So I think it's a great service, and I'll be interested to see how many games they have on tape delay.
Yeah,
because if you can't watch it live, you know, sometimes you want to watch it on tape delay. Will they have that feature?
So yeah, it'll be available, but not until later that day. I think after 9 o'clock Eastern time, so like what, 6 p.m. Pacific time. So, and by that time, I mean, from this day and age, say compared to Fox Sports World days. In Fox Sports World days, you could probably, you know, I mean, not even pay attention. Or you could actually pay attention to the newspapers, or, you mean, before the internet, and not know the result of a match. And you'd have, say, the 10 o'clock Eastern time game on a Saturday live. And then right after that, you'd have, say, the 12 o'clock game. And that would be a game that was tape delayed from earlier that day, and not know the result. But I think these days, though, that's the thing, though, is that they're making replays available, but not until later. But by that point, anyone that goes on the internet or Facebook or anything, or you know, your friend texting you, you're going to know the score of that match. So it almost makes the replays irrelevant, really.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, it costs money. I mean, I know a month ago when we were talking about how productions work, you know, it costs a lot of money to replay a game, and because you have to have all the crew on hand. So I would be very interested to see what their viewing figures are like, because I think it's really going to tell the NBC executives exactly what the Premiership is worth when the big boys aren't playing. And I think they might be in for a bit of a rude awakening.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of TV ratings, just a couple to throw out here, and then we'll have the full list at worldsoccertalk.com. But last Sunday, it was Southampton against Man City on NBC, an over-the-air game. And this is a rare game. It was at 2 p.m. Eastern on a Sunday. That one had 876,000 viewers for that match, which is pretty good. But again, being over the air and being a later kickoff than usual on a Sunday, it should be bigger. But then again, at the same time, I mean, Southampton are safe, and Man City are not going to win the title. And so, not that it's a dead rubber game, but it's pretty close to one. So 876,000 for that one. And then one other number to share, and that's the DFB Pokal, the German Cup final, which was on ESPN2 on Saturday. And this was Bayer Leverkusen against Bayern Munich. And this game on ESPN2 had 108,000 viewers on this one, which to me is pretty disappointing. But at the same time, there's a lot of other football on television to choose from, so there's a lot of competition. But again, that gives ESPN an idea of kind of that diehard, hardcore German soccer fans, what that base is. And it's a relatively small number to grow from, but at least they have a good indication there. Moving on to...
Well, yeah, I mean...
Go ahead.
I didn't realize the number was that small, Chris. I mean, 100,000 people for, you know, Bayern Munich in a cup final game on ESPN2, which is a national platform. I think that's a very disappointing number, if you ask me.
Yeah, because even if you go back to some of the FSC days, the Fox Soccer Channel days, you had some Premier League matches on. You mean, and the number of homes that Fox Soccer Channel was in was like what, less than 30 million, I think, or 20 million perhaps. But those numbers, I think, were in the 60,000 to 80,000 to 100,000 back then.
Yes, you are correct.
All right. Moving on to listener mailbag. Rico Richardson says, look, it's no big deal if NBC doesn't talk about Division 1 or First Division. I mean, the league constantly changed names. Heck, do you see people talk about prepaid Super Bowl champions when it comes to the NFL? The Premier League is a brand and NBC is just being consistent. I don't think it's erasure. And Nick, what this was talking about was on a previous podcast, I went on this whole rant of about how the Premier League, about how NBC Sports were focusing in on how many titles Liverpool had won. And rather than saying, okay, right, with Liverpool winning the Premier League title, the first Premier League title, that raises the top flight titles to 19, only one away from Manchester United. But the focus on NBC Sports was really on how many Premier League titles had each club won. And they're basically paying lip service to everything that happened before 1992, which is like since 1888 to 1992 is a long amount of history there. Do you have any takes on that one in terms of your thoughts about kind of how the Premier League is positioned as a brand and how anything before that is kind of forgotten?
Yeah, I think that's a little disappointing from NBC. I mean, I understand why they want to brand it that way because they're paying so much money for it. But a top flight title is a top flight title. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's the Premier League, the Barclays Premier League, the Super League, the whatever name you want to call it. If you are the champion of England, you know, you are the champion of England. And so I thought their graphic, and if I'm not mistaken, I think on their graphic they had Liverpool with one.
Yeah.
And then later on in the show they changed it to 19.
Right.
So I can imagine that the phone lines must have just been exploding with Liverpool fans going, "How dare you mark us down as one Premier League title? You know, we have 19 top flight titles. Put it down as 19." So
exactly.
I understand where NBC are coming from, but you know what? The football audience these days, Chris, it's educated, it's smart, it knows its history. Don't try and pull the wool over its eyes because it'll come back and bite you.
Exactly. And that was really kind of the genesis of my rant was talking about how that was one of the first few mistakes that NBC Sports has made, where they showed a little bit of naivety in terms of not really understanding the history of English football and also the fan bases and what it really means. But moving on, Jason says, I've been watching a ton of Championship and FA Cup on ESPN Plus the last 2 weeks. Quite glorious to have it again, cheering for Brentford to get in there and take a top two spot before the end of the league schedule. Also cheering for the smaller clubs like Luton and Barnsley to get out of the relegation zone. Also, I liked the piped crowd noise myself. On a downside, I'm sick and tired of the kneeling before the whistle of the game. Next up is Harry. Harry says, I'm interested to see which has better results on limiting exposure to COVID-19. The MLS bubble system or the regional plan by USL. Listening to World Soccer Talk, Kartik was talking about how he was not a fan of the USL model, and if they have to play the best, is not to play. And Kartik, I think mentioned on Twitter that he's actually boycotting the USL games that are going to be shown, I think, on ESPN or ESPN2 this weekend. And is dead against it in terms of USL's decision to go ahead and play matches with fans in the stadium. So Nick, you were talking before about the Premier League and you mean wanting to have a product like Peacock, but needing the fans there to really kind of give it greater value, which it does add value to it. Well, USL is kind of throwing everything out the window and saying, okay, hey, we're putting fans in the stadium and let's see what happens.
Well, I'm not sure if they are going to be able to put fans in the stadium by law, obviously with these spikes happening everywhere. I think, you know, certain states are making decisions to cut back and to slow down the opening. So it'll be interesting to see which teams and which states say, yeah, you can have fans in the stadiums and certainly maintain the social distancing, which is so important. But, I mean, as you know, I've been involved with USL through the Las Vegas Lights and Eric Winalda. So I will definitely have a passing interest in the USL, and I'm not like Kartik. I'm not going to boycott it.
Yeah, in Louisville, which I think Louisville's playing this game this weekend, the Saturday, so they've been given permission to have 50% capacity. So that's for the Louisville City FC. So that'll be one to watch on ESPN to see how that's handled. Next up is Donald Dickerson. He says, the reason a lot of people illegally stream content is because the networks make it so damn hard to watch it legally. Most people who want to watch the Premier League would buy NBC Sports Gold. But alas, NBC makes you buy both a live service and gold if you want to watch every match from your team. I would hope here in America, the content providers will realize that making not only football easier to access, but also all sports in America needs to be blackout free. Like, for example, he says, I want to watch the St. Louis Cardinals in St. Louis. I should be able to subscribe to MLS TV, not a bloated live TV service. Sports should be easy to access and at a fair cost. Next up is Disco George. Disco George says, the lockdown's allowing me to watch a lot of matches across the board between working from home during the week and not having any MLS or NWSL games to go to on the weekend. I'm getting to see a far bigger range of matches than normal. I mean, it would be nice to see the Champions League quarterfinals and semifinals at home instead of on a stream at the office with someone whining about how they don't know how to change the toner in the copier or whatever. With regards to illegal streaming, it's not much better in other sports. I'm a huge gymnastics fan, and you need regular NBC, NBCSN, Olympic Channel, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, SEC Network, Pac-12 Network, Big Ten Network, and quite a few of the regional Fox Sports networks to see everything, which is basically impossible. International fans have to illegally stream NCAA meets, and the US-based fans use VPNs to get BBC or CBC streams of big international meets because NBC's coverage is so heinous. So that's interesting on that, Disco George, in terms of just all the hoops. We soccer fans think we have it bad, but it sounds like gymnastics fans have it even worse in terms of all the hoops they have to go through.
Yeah, well, I'm a gymnastics fan once every 4 years, so
right.
I'm not sure what Disco George is complaining about. I mean, if he lived in England, he would have a right to complain, because here in the US, we see more live Premiership football than perhaps anywhere else in the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, Nick, here's one for you. This is from Robert, and he says, who's your favorite commentator and co-commentator?
Well, I've always had a very soft spot for Martin Tyler, and I've got a great story for you if we have time.
Sure.
I'm covering my first World Cup in South Korea and Japan. I'm in the media center at Seoul, and I'm sitting at my desk writing my my pre-match thoughts. And I look up, and who's sitting opposite me? But Martin Tyler. And so I very rarely get starstruck, but I became completely starstruck, completely tongue-tied. And Martin, he's a great guy, mm-hmm. took pity on me, and we ended up chatting for about an hour and a half, became great friends, and would see each other every 2 years as we, you know, did World Cups and European Championships and whatnot. So Martin Tyler's my favorite. And I like Stuart Robson. Mm-hmm. I think he doesn't make it about himself. So he's right up there. So yeah, I mean, if there's a duo, it'd probably be Martin Tyler and Stuart Robson.
Oh man, I'd say Martin Tyler is my all-time favorite. But I like the Martin Tyler of old, kind of yeah. back a couple of decades ago. I mean, he's fine now, but he's different now than in what he was.
Well, I think he's beginning to lose the magic, and of course that's going to happen after 35 plus years in the business. But when he was on the top of his game, I really did think he was the best commentator around.
Absolutely, yeah, and my favorite too. So my favorite commentator is John Champion, which goes to show how much of a coup it was for ESPN to really to grab him from the Premier League and bring him over here. And my favorite play-by-play commentator, I think back in the day, all-time classic would be Craig Burley, just because he was so entertaining to listen to, and he'd call it as it was, and he didn't care what, if he upset anyone. But I agree with you on this one, Nick. As far as my current would be Stuart Robson, and I'm glad to hear, actually, Stuart Robson is getting back and doing a lot more Premier League games, and this is the first time in several years. This is, I think, today, on Thursday, he did the second game from the last couple of weeks. He did the Bournemouth Spurs game, and it's a rarity to have him on the world feed for the Premier League. So that's a great thing to have him back. All right, Nick, just a couple more comments to go. Leo Steph says, I think the title race in Spain is over. In the meantime, the race for the title in Portugal is hot. I can recommend the Portuguese league to people who do not normally watch this league. There are many beautiful goals and talented players there. Why not give this league a chance? The coverage of the Portuguese championship in Spanish is excellent. Unfortunately, about the English side, the same cannot be said, but still. And I agree there, too. And then last but not least, Paul Robinson says, I listened to your last couple of episodes, and I can't believe that as of now there is not going to be, actually this would have been before today's news, but before there's not going to be any English language broadcast of the Champions League on the Europa League or US TV in any form. So that we know is not true anymore. But Paul does says, maybe it's time you guys move over to the Great White North, where DAZN Canada is available for $150 Canadian a year, which is about $120 US, and we get every Premier League game, lots of Championship games, all the Serie A games, all the Champions League games, and Europa League, and I think cricket and rugby and all the Premier League productions shows and also NFL. So far, I haven't had to listen to Alexi Lalas or Warren Barton yet. So, yeah, that's always an option, Nick. We can always move to Canada and get DAZN and get everything streaming and nothing on television. All right, so we want you to have your say.
Yeah, there you go.
You can always reach us via email with any comments, questions, feedback that you have. You can reach us through email at web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. So thank you for listening. We'll be back next Thursday with maybe some more scoops, more information about watching soccer on television. Thank you for listening. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. And with Kartik not here and then Nick dropping off, I would like to say enjoy your football.